Saturday, I was flipping channels and found the History Channel, and they were having a marathon day called A Day of Heroes. I don't know if you saw it, but what they had were they had war movies on all day. And one of the movies that they showed when I was flipping was movie Hacksaw Ridge. Did anybody ever see Hacksaw Ridge? Okay. It's about the Battle of Okinawa in World War II. And the movie tells the story of this guy, Desmond Dawes, who his story is amazing. But one of the things about the movie is it's really graphic about the horrors of war. And what comes front and center is just the sheer brutality of World War II, especially in the Pacific, fighting against the Japanese. And the Battle of Okinawa was fought in 1945. It was horrific. But to make matters worse with the Battle of Okinawa, by that time of the war, for the Japanese, the war was already a lost cause. So all this fighting they were doing, they were fighting a losing battle. Actually, in World War II, Japan's defeat in World War II was pretty much sealed way back in 1942. When the Japanese Navy experienced almost a complete defeat at Midway. And then right after that, the Army was defeated on Guadalcanal when we started to push Japan back. And at that point, even the Japanese leaders, they knew pretty much the war was lost. And yet they kept fighting. In fact, the American Marines, kept pushing them back on the island hopping campaign closer and closer to their homeland. The Japanese Navy was all but destroyed in Leyte Gulf, and their Air Force was destroyed at the Marianas, and just there was pretty much almost nothing left. Yet, as the battles got closer to Japan, they got that much more fierce. In fact, the Japanese, even in the midst of defeat, they would do these desperate bonsai charges, and they'd send these kamikaze planes in, and even they would even convince their own citizens, like in the Battle of Okinawa, that they should commit suicide rather than being captured by the Americans. Yet, in all of that, the Japanese didn't surrender. So the Americans, they did the unthinkable. We dropped an atomic bomb on Hiroshima. And still, it wasn't until we had to drop a second on Nagasaki that the Japanese finally surrendered. 3 years later. 3 years after, really, they'd realize it was a lost cause. And I can't help but imagine, when you think of that, all of the loss, all of the pain that was experienced because they continued to fight a losing battle. And I started to think about that. Why do sometimes we insist on fighting a losing battle in life? And that's a question, actually, we're going to get into this morning as we return back to Genesis. Genesis chapter 42 is where we left off last week. We've been talking about the life of Joseph, and we're going to continue in that. And actually, it's today, as last week, it's about Joseph's brothers and Joseph's father, Jacob. Joseph's brothers who had betrayed him and sold him to slavery 20 years before, they take center stage along with their father, Jacob, whose actions even before that had kind of led to the turmoil of Joseph being lost in all of this through his favoritism and some of those things and kind of his failure. So that's what we're going to kind of talk about this week is, man, how do we deal with our sin? We started last week talking about how do we deal with our sin. So last week, how it kind of started was there's a shift in our story, as the brothers, because of this worldwide famine that we had talked about that came upon the land, and here Joseph, God gave him the interpretation of Pharaoh's dreams, and he was placed second in command of Egypt to collect all the food so that Egypt would have food. And because of that famine, Jacob sends his sons to Egypt to go buy food so that they can live. And they come face to face with Joseph, but they don't recognize him. They don't know who he is. Joseph knows who they are. So Joseph then accuses them of being spies, and he throws them into prison. And they were forced to take a cold, hard look at themselves. And they took that important yet uncomfortable step toward freedom. when they admitted or acknowledged their guilt to themselves. See, and that's the first step in dealing with sin, is to acknowledge the guilt of it to ourselves. In fact, we saw that in chapter 42 and verse 21, that as they were sitting in prison, and they said to each other, you know, in truth, we're guilty concerning our brother, that we saw the distress of his soul when he begged for us, when he threw him in the pit and he begged for his life and they didn't listen. And that's why we're having to suffer now, all of this hardship. And then Reuben, who wanted to sneak Joseph out of the pit, said, you know, this is why I told you not to touch him. So now there comes a reckoning for his blood. And they come to this point where they're saying, yeah, we did bad. And then Joseph. And here Joseph starts to take this offers this picture of Jesus, as we talked about last week. And Joseph brings him out of prison 3 days later, and he says to them, you know what? I'm going to let you all go back to go get your brother Benjamin, who you left, because you said there was another brother, and I want you to bring him back. And to make sure you come back, I'm going to take one of you. He takes Simeon and keeps him in custody and sends the other brothers back. But he sends them back with food so that they can survive, take it back to their family, and another surprise he gives them. Right at the close of what we were talking about last week in verse 25, it says, not only did he put food in there, but he instructed his men to return the money that they had brought to pay for the food and to put it back in their bags. And it said, this he did for them. So this is where we pick up as they're now starting to head back to Canaan from Egypt on their journey as they just went through all this trouble. So verse 26, where we pick up. Let's just read and then we'll go from there. It says, so then they loaded their donkeys with the grain and departed. And as one of them opened his sack to give his donkey fodder at the lodging place. So basically they're at a rest stop and they got to feed their donkeys. So he goes into the bag and wants to give some of the grain to his donkey. And when he did that, he saw his money in the mouth of his sack. He said to his brother, my money has been put back. Here it is in the mouth of my sack. And look what happens. And it says, and their hearts failed them. They turned trembling to one another, saying, what is this that God has done to us? So their hearts sink. And they're basically sitting there going, you know what's going to happen? They're going to tell us, they're going to come back to us and say, we stole this money. So now we're going to be in real trouble. And they'll throw us all in jail. What is God doing to us? Verse 29, it says, So instead of going back, though, they continue home. It says, when they came to Jacob, their father, in the land of Canaan, they told him all that had happened to them, saying, the man, the Lord of the land, who they're talking about Joseph here, although they don't know it's Joseph, but they say, the man, the Lord of the land, spoke roughly to us and took us to be spies of the land. But we said to him, we're honest men. We've never been spies. We're 12 brothers, sons of our father. One is no more, and the youngest is this day with our father in the land of Canaan. So they're basically saying, they're accusing us, and we didn't do anything. Well, they know otherwise, but they're putting themselves out to their father. And then they said, then the man, the Lord of the land, said to us, by this I shall know that you are honest men. Leave one of your brothers with me, and take grain for the famine of your household, and go your way. Bring your youngest brother to me. Then I shall know you're not spies, but honest men, and I'll deliver your brother to you, and you shall trade in the land, and then you'll be able to come and go and get as much food as you need. Then verse 35, it says, as they emptied their sacks, behold, every man's bundle of money was in a sack. And when they and their father saw their bundles of money, they were afraid. They're like, uh-oh, this isn't good. And Jacob, their father, said to them, you have bereaved me of my children. You know what bereaved means? Basically, you've robbed me of my children. You've taken them away by your actions. Joseph is no more, and Simeon is no more, and now you would take Benjamin. Now, we don't know that he suspects they did anything to Joseph. Remember, he sent Joseph to go report to visit them, and Joseph never came back. So they just said, on account of every time you're responsible for one of my sons, they don't come back, basically. And he says, so now you would have me take Benjamin? All of this has come against me. Or why is God punishing me? Then Reuben said to his father, kill two of my sons if I don't bring them back to you. Put him in my hands and I will bring him back to you. And he said, my son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead and he is the only one left. Now remember, he's got 10 other sons, but Benjamin is the son of his most beloved wife, Rachel. Just as Joseph was, and he knows that Joseph, he believes Joseph's dead. So he says, I'll have nobody left of basically Rachel. So he's compounding his sin against these poor boys that are sitting here. But dad, we're your sons. No, I have nobody left. Basically, you guys don't matter. If harm would happen to him on the journey that you are to make, you would bring down my gray hairs with sorrow to Sheol. Or if anything were to happen to Benjamin, I'll just die. Yikes. Last week and this week aren't very uplifting, are they? They're kind of talking about confronting our sin and then how we deal with our sin and how it can really mess us up. And that's kind of what we're talking about today. Really, in reality, things could have been great for this family. I mean, they'd finally acknowledged their guilt to themselves. They finally said, oh, now we can be free if we just take this further now. But they didn't. You know, and they had gotten food for the famine, so they were going to survive for a while. Yet instead of experiencing this freedom and this joy, they brought more stress upon themselves. And Jacob, he was all the more reminded of his loss and his shame for all the things that he had done. You see, acknowledging our guilt, it's great, and it's necessary for us to do that. But its value is wasted if we keep that to ourselves. You see, remorse is meaningless without repentance. Do you know that? Remorse, feeling bad for ourselves, bad about our failures and our sin, it's meaningless without repentance. In fact, guilt will eat us up unless we surrender it to God. Until then, we carry it around ourselves. We try to control it. And it's like controlling the uncontrollable or trying to fight a losing battle. Yet, you know what? When we're confronted with our own sin, we tend to do this, don't we? I know I do. Usually that's our first response is when we're done with that, what can I do to make it right? And we try to control it. And we might feel bad and we might say, maybe I got to do good things to outweigh the bad or whatever. And anyway, we tend to want to just beat ourselves up when we fail or when we sin instead of surrendering it to God who can take care of it. And instead of that, we hold on to it and we fight to our detriment. But here in our passage this morning, you know what we discover? We get a glimpse of what's behind some of this self-destructive behavior when we are confronted with our own sin. And this self-destructive behavior that brings us anything but freedom. In fact, here we discover through these brothers and through Jacob what keeps us from surrendering when we're confronted by our guilt. Or why we would rather hold on to our sin and deal with it ourselves rather than bringing it to God. And I think it starts with fear. In fact, that's what we see through this whole passage. This idea of holding on to our guilt, trying to deal with it ourselves, it finds its roots in fear. Here we see that we can fear that we have too much to lose. We fear if we take our sin or we guilt to God that he may ask us to pay something we're not willing to pay. He may expose us and we may be embarrassed or we may have to make restitution or we may have to face more shame. So we don't want to bring it to God. We'll say, I'm just going to deal with it quietly by myself. So no one else knows. You see, God may ask us a price too great for what we think is our freedom, for forgiveness. And you know what the issue that's wrong with that is? Is because our focus there is on what sin may cost us rather than the cost of sin. And there's a difference. Sometimes we look at, well, what does my sin cost me? Because I don't want to have to pay that. Rather than understanding what the cost of sin is really all about, and we could never pay it. Not only wouldn't we want to, we couldn't. In fact, that's what Jacob was. Jacob was afraid when his sons told him that he had to send Benjamin. Basically, he's like, this is too much for me to pay. What would I have left? What would I have left to remind me of my most beloved wife, Rachel, if I lose? I've already lost her. I've lost my oldest son through her. And now I'll lose my other one. And while losing Benjamin was a possibility if he sent him, by not sending Benjamin, basically he's condemning Simeon, right? Who's left there. So if they leave, then Simeon's lost forever. But is Simeon worth as much as Benjamin to Jacob? You see how he's thinking? And he's like, man, that's too much to lose. So maybe I'll sacrifice Simeon so I can keep Benjamin. Ooh. But even more telling is that Jacob, this great man of God, and we saw in Jacob's journey how he learned to trust in God. Remember, all that he went through with Laban and all of these things and being stuck there working for Laban and raising his flocks. And yet God reminded Jacob, I will be with you always. I'll be right with you because you are the son of promise. The promise I've given to Abraham, I give to you, and all of these blessings and that the earth will be blessed through you is coming to you. And I'll make sure it happens. And God reminds him of that. In fact, God reminds him, I'm going to lead you back to the promised land. And he does. And he keeps him safe and brings reconciliation with his brother who at one time wanted to kill him. And all of this experience with God being faithful, yet nowhere in this passage does Jacob go to God, does he? Nowhere in this sorrow, in this suffering, in dealing with sin, does he say, God, help me. Instead, he tries to move it himself, right? And he tells his sons, no, you're not doing it, because it'll be too much for me to bear. So where's this thought? I'm so caught up in what sin will cost me rather than the cost of sin. And he tries to protect what he has rather than trusting God to provide what he needs. Have you ever been here? Have you ever been here when you're dealing with your own sin and you're just like, man, God, you know, we put that focus on what sin may cost us and we just sit there and say, so I better deal with it because I don't want it to go any further than anybody needs to know about or God needs to know about because he might ask me to give up something. I don't want to give up. So I can just suffer now and hope that's enough. Or I can try to manage my sin and my guilt. And we put the focus on, so what's it going to cost me to get rid of it? Rather than what the true cost is, that sin cost God. You see, it's not what we lose as a result of our sin, but what we gain through Jesus gladly paying the price for our sin. In fact, Paul talks about this in Romans. He says this, he who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also with him graciously give us all things? It's not a loss. When we bring our sin to God and we say to God, God, this is my guilt. This is my shame I have. And even as believers, we're to do this. We're to bring our sin. And when we fail to God so that he can free us, so we don't have to carry it around ourselves. And when we do that, God says, great, I'll take it. So that you can be free. And we get into this thinking that that's not going to happen. The truth is, we have nothing without Jesus. And we lose nothing in surrendering. Rather, we gain freedom. Yet, you know what happens when we're dealing with our sin ourselves? We fight on. Fight that losing battle, right? Not just in fear of what we might lose, but we also fight on because we may feel we've done enough. And we say, you know what? All right, I've acknowledged my sin and I've suffered because of it and I feel bad, so that should be enough. So I'm not going to go to God because what if he's going to require more of me? I've done enough. I've suffered enough. Look back at our passage, at the brothers and Jacob and how they experienced back in Egypt. The brothers suffered, right? They suffered accusations. They suffered imprisonment. They acknowledged the horrific actions they had did 20 years before to their brother Joseph, where they threw him in a pit, left him to die, then sold him into slavery, then basically passed him off as dead. Certainly feeling guilty for that was punishment enough. Them sitting there in confinement and saying, you know, there's a reckoning for his blood. So this must be it. Isn't it awful? But then once it was passed, they were like, all right, let's go home. Yay. And they're like, phew, that's gone. We've suffered enough. And then they open up the sack and they find their money still there. And what do? What has God done to us? This isn't fair. Why are we having to do more? Haven't we done enough? And look at Jacob says the same thing, doesn't he? And his frustration of the prospect of losing his other son. What does he say? He says, I'll die if it happens. Haven't I suffered enough? And what happens is they're all seeing their troubles that they go through because of their sin as punishment. And thus, their suffering as penance. But now that I've suffered, it's done. The truth is, no amount of suffering on our part, no amount of feeling bad and feeling shame and going through hardship because of our failures and our sin will free us from the guilt of our sin. We can never do enough. Only Jesus can. And the prophet Isaiah says, we have all become like one who is unclean. All our righteous deeds, everything we do to try to be right with God and to deal with our sin, is like a polluted garment. We all fade like a leaf, and our iniquities, like the wind, take us away. Everything we do, it doesn't amount to anything. Our suffering or feeling guilty can't deal with our sin. It's not enough. Only bringing our sin to Jesus is enough. Do you know that? We can beat ourselves up over and over again. You know, we do that thing that we keep praying to God and we say, all right, God, this is the last time I've done that. And yet, the next day, we find ourselves doing that again and we say, I've done that thing I said I wasn't going to do again. And we start beating ourselves up. And we start hating ourselves and we start saying, what is wrong with me? And we start punishing ourselves. Or maybe we fail and we want to hide ourselves away from God and others. And we suffer alone in shame, just hiding ourselves. But do you know what? All that feeling bad will never be enough. That guilt of our sin will never go away. No matter how much we fight and no matter how much we do. The only way it goes away is when we surrender and we give it to God. Guilt is not meant for us to carry. Over time, you know what guilt does? It crushes us. It beats us down, sort of the way that Jacob felt in the prospect of losing his sons. Yet freedom is found not by doing more, but by letting go. You know, Jesus said himself in Matthew chapter 11, he says, come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, all who are carrying stuff. He says, because my yoke is easy, my burden is light. He says, come to me, I'll take it. You don't need to carry that. And we say, but I've suffered. Well, great. You didn't have to. When we acknowledge our sin, we give it to God and he takes it. So we keep trying to deal with our sin. And instead of helping us, instead of finding freedom, we find ourselves burdened. And however, in the heat of the battle, we often miss this, not only because sin weighs us down, but also because we misread our opponent. And it's kind of interesting I use the word opponent here, because this is the way that Joseph's brothers misread God. First of all, they see God as an opponent. God, what have you done to us? And they say, God is against us because of all the stuff we've done wrong. And they're looking at God basically saying, not only is he against us, and he's out to get us. And they're missing the point that God is for us. Remember right in the beginning, where we left off last week, instead of them saying, well, what has God done to us by giving us our money? What did Joseph intend by giving them back the money? He said, this they did for them as a blessing. And sometimes we look at God, and sometimes when he brings up our failings and we say, what is God doing to us? Rather than, wow, this could be God wanting us to see this and see that he's bigger than it and it's for us. So they misread God, and they also misread God because they see him as some vengeful person rather than being good. So I find it interesting that both the brothers and Jacob, in the heat of the battle, as they're dealing with this sin, they both blame God. He's not their help, he's their opponent. And the brothers, they blame God, and they said, what have you done to us, instead of what God was doing for them through Joseph. And Jacob, when he's hearing that Simeon's detained and that he's going to have to lose Benjamin after Joseph's already gone, what does he exclaim? And down in verse 36, he says, all of this has come against me. Woe is me. This isn't fair. All this is going against me. Boy, if Jacob only knew. Now we get the benefit of reading the rest of the story, and we get to see that it's really Joseph and God's really saving them. If he only knew all that God was doing for him. You know, sometimes we tend to want to blame God when we're stuck in our guilt and our shame, and we say, why is God bringing all this stuff? If we only know what he's trying to accomplish, the good that he's trying to accomplish with us and in us, it would change everything. Yet in the battle here, Jacob can't see this, that God's wanting to save them for his promise, reunite him with his lost son. And sometimes, you know, we can misread God. Even when it comes to surrendering our guilt, we feel, you know, that we fail again, we sin, we do that what we never said we'd do again, and we do it one more time. And we get to that point, and we say, man, I'm bad. And you know, sin is bad. It is. That's why Jesus went to the cross. Yet, sometimes we beat ourselves up because we're so caught up in damage control. And we sit there and say, man, this is really bad. And we picture ourselves with God. And God saying to us, all right, Mark, this is the same thing I've forgiven you 100 times. But this time it's the last straw. And then it's the old zap. Do you ever think of God like that? You know, I better not do this again because God's going to get fed up with me. And we start to misread who God is for us. And we think there's going to come a time where he's going to be against us. And we miss the reality of his love and his grace in forgiving us every time we come. In fact, Paul says that in Ephesians. He says, but God being rich in mercy, because of the great love which he has for us, even when we were dead in our trespasses, even when we were at our worst, in our most sin, the most unlovable, he made us alive together with Jesus, because by his grace we've been saved. That's how good it is. You see, God was working his grace in the brothers, in Joseph's brothers, and in Jacob. Egypt and this ruler of rulers that they're talking about, who was Joseph, they were hardly their undoing. Rather, they were their salvation. However, because they were so caught up in damage control caused by their past and being guilty because of their failures of the past, they see God as their punisher rather than their savior. And they're fighting a losing battle with guilt. Have you ever been there? Have you ever done that? We can carry guilt of our sin, trying to manage and controlling it ourselves. We see God as our enemy. Sometimes feeling we need to hide from him. God's someone who's angry with us. He's out to punish us rather than someone who's our friend and wanting us to come to relieve us, to take from us, which we can't deal with ourselves. He desires to free us so that we can walk with him. But misreading God keeps us from surrendering to him and finding his freedom. You see, while taking that first uncomfortable step that we talked about last week, acknowledging our guilt that, hey, we did mess up, and acknowledging our sin and our failures and our guilt to ourselves, while taking that step is important, it's wasted if it ends there. In fact, guilt will eat us up unless we surrender it. Until then, we're going to try to carry it ourselves, try to control the uncontrollable, and continue to fight a losing battle where the only one who gets hurt is us. You see, freedom comes when we trust God enough to surrender. So, in 2 weeks, we're going to pray in just a second, but in 2 weeks, next week we have our challenge message, but in 2 weeks, we're going to continue because we didn't have enough time to go through everything that's going on here this morning. But what we find next week now is we get to see where all of this carrying our guilt ourselves takes us, what it leads to. And then what we get to see is what could be if we only trust, and how awesome it really is, the joy that awaits us. So the story starts to turn around next week for us as we get closer to Easter and an amazing homecoming. Let's pray.